Well, rare as it seems these days, it's just Dan and I this week. We were just saying we're kind of into that time of year where there's not a whole lot of news, not a whole lot of stuff going with the team. I will say I'm seeing even just on like Instagram and Strava, this team is staying very active. I think we're both really glad to see what people are doing. People are crushing it. Lots of, you know, lots of Zwift miles being logged. Great attendance at the running group. I wasn't able to make it tonight.
It was awesome. We had kids driving down from Bountiful.
Yeah, like super. Yeah. I mean, who drives down from Bountiful for running group? That's awesome. Like,
yeah, it was awesome.
So we're really happy with that. Couple of bits. I have to say, this is one of those episodes that Dan has put a lot of time and research into and that I want to give you as much time as possible for. That being said, I do have a couple of random bits of bike world news I wanted to hit.
Okay.
Out of the gate, really fast. First one for you Cross fans.
We need to bring back the quiz thing.
Do need to bring back the quiz, but the quiz required effort on my part. And because of that, that hasn't happened quite as much. If there is an expression of popular demand indicating that people like the quiz, I will consider bringing it back. How about that?
People want the quiz back.
Okay. Well, for me. When I hear that from people and not from you, I will consider it. But couple things around. First off, Van Aert and Vanderpool will go head-to-head and cross this year, which is cool. With Vanderpool doing mountain bike and then mountain bike and road, and then Van Aert really being primarily a road rider these days, we haven't seen that quite as much. Some other names have been able to win cross races, but coming up pretty shortly, we're going to see who's better on the cross course right now between the two, which I think will be exciting, something to look forward to. As citizens of the United States, I think you can only pirate it to watch it. I don't know if there's a legit way to watch cross right now, or the GCN app went away. That's what I used last year, if memory serves. So actually, you know what? The truth is get a VPN and just watch it on Eurosport or something. Beyond that, and this is somewhat interesting, we have the Tom Pidcock transfer. Now, Tom Pidcock is relevant because he is currently the Olympic champion of the discipline that Maybird is primarily based on, which is XCO style mountain bike racing. Tom Pidcock, if you don't know, is a name you should have in your, you know, kind of repertoire of five or six bike races you can talk about. British guy, younger than me, which is super depressing. He's, I think, 23, 24. Super, super talented, multidisciplinary rider. Came out of cross, funny enough, now that I think of it. I think he initially got big as like a crit and cross racer, rode around in the kind of specialized Trinity circle for a while before he was scooped up by Ineos, formerly Team Sky, where he's been riding for the past few seasons. A lot of you, if you watched the Netflix Tour de France documentary, his relationship with the team was one of the most interesting parts of that. I think it's an instructive story to talk about because I think it touches on a lot of interesting themes. Tom Pidcock is a super, super talented rider. He's a smaller guy, mostly kind of a climber, but also can throw it around in the one-day races. To give you an example of how versatile this guy is, he has both won on Alpe d'Huez, which involved him doing that daredevil descending that was still flying around Instagram all the time. There's that famous video of him descending in California with Safa Bryan that a lot of people have seen. So he's the rider that can do that, and he has outsprinted Wout van Aert in a flat drag race at a one-day race. So on top of that, he can beat Nino. He can even beat Nino in really good shape. I don't know if he could beat prime Nino. We'll never know. But this is a guy who can basically, like, on his day, can really, and like, in on the cross circuit too, has beaten both van Aert and van der Poel in cross races.
So he looks like that one guy in Pirates of the Caribbean.
He does look like that one guy in Pirates of the Caribbean. Lots of memes about his teeth. He's a Brit. Lots of laughs. But I think he's a very relevant rider, right? And again, Olympic champion of mountain biking. He was with Ineos, who have struggled, if we're honest, over the past few years. Rumors that that team might be getting shaken up in a major way here soon. He was with Ineos, and part of the... Did you watch the Netflix Tour de France thing?
Mm-mm.
You should. It was really good. I actually think you're kind of the perfect person for it, where you kind of understand cycling, but not so much on the road. And there's basically a big conflict with him and team management over him riding for himself versus riding for the team. Because he's the kind of rider who's like, I'm going to win everything I touch. I'm a champion. Everywhere I go is to win, which is great. And he does win a lot. But I think he kind of lives in, and this is my editorial opinion.
He's the main character.
He has main character syndrome, and I think he's a little bit delusional for thinking that he can throw down with Poggi and Jonas at the Tour de France. And he shouldn't be able to, right? For a multidisciplinary rider to be able to challenge those guys is insane, right? For a single disciplinary rider, like ask Remco Evenepoel how he's doing against those guys, and then see if you think that Tom Pidcock, who's throwing his hat in 10 different rings, could possibly compete, right? And so it sounds like the team are kind of like, you kind of need to pick a lane or be more supportive when you're riding for us on the road. Like, and there's this, all this back and forth. And then it kind of came out that he was going to break his contract and leave the team, which is a big deal. This doesn't happen a lot in any sport, right? Breaking contract, leaving a team. This was a couple months ago. And then it came out that they'd fixed it and everything was fine. And then just barely, he does actually, I think they mutually agreed to end the contract because Ineos was also paying him a ton, right? Like he's probably getting paid, I don't know. He's probably getting paid well over, I mean, at least well over €1 million a year. Probably maybe into like 2-3 range, right? Mm. And like Pinarello, which is Ineos' sponsor, had developed a mountain bike for him, right? They'd been like, tell us what you wanted a bike and we'll make one for you. They developed two different bikes for him, done a lot there. But he was poached by a team called Q36.5, which is a Swiss team. Owned by a South African mining billionaire who has Swiss citizenship, ? Also, the guy owns Pinarello too, which kind of makes it this bizarre, interesting thing where basically Tom Pidcock is going to go to this tiny little continental level Swiss team. He's going to be their best rider by a long shot, presumably because he's the kind of guy, he's kind of a Peter Sagan character where when he wins, it's kind of, he doesn't really need the team to do it. But the interesting thing is the team is sponsored by Scott. So he's going to ride Scott road bikes on the road, but the guy who funds the team owns Pinarello. And because of that, he will be riding Pinarello mountain bikes and cyclocross bikes, which were designed basically for him, but then going and riding a Scott bike on the road, and Pinarello can't be mad about it because the guy who owns Pinarello is the guy pulling all the strings here. So it's a really weird, confusing, I don't know if that stuff's interesting to you. We don't usually jump into it on the podcast. So I thought I'd throw 5 minutes at that. If people want us to go into that more, again, communicate it. But that is the kind of big cycling news that's going around that people are talking about. Outside of that, I don't know if there's anything super relevant. I don't know how much time we want to throw at the news anymore. And I do want to give you time for your topic.
Yeah, just local news again. Reminder about the opening meeting.
Yep.
Get your friends that are excited about riding bikes to come.
Yes.
Do attend. It'll be fun to have more people there.
I should say too, if you're planning on being on the team, please come. You know, and I think especially like to be candid, like if people, I think a lot of people are like, oh well, I'm already on the team. I know everything about the team. If someone wants to go on a date with me that night, you know, like whatever I've got, you know, that's my bingo night or whatever, like. I'm already on the team. Things fine. It really is a big deal. If you're walking in, if you're like, I maybe want to join this team, and you show up and there's a bunch of people there, that creates a really good community vibe. And especially when you have people there who like go around and talk to people and be like, oh yeah, well I ride for this team. Oh, I joined forever. You know, like this is not a new rider meeting. This is a team meeting.
It's a chance to get together.
And it's like winter. You're not seeing it. You know, you're only seeing people from your school right now. Like,
and we do have some cool, we are going to try to implement some different things this year that I think will be pretty exciting and interesting to some of you. So, yeah. So do plan on attending. Yeah. Just remember like the Zwift ride Wednesday.
Yep.
The running groups most Mondays.
Yep.
Yeah. We'll just keep, stay fit this winter.
Yeah. More hikes upcoming. You guys will see more about those soon. But with all that being said, I do want to, you know, before we kind of click over the 10-minute mark here, I do want to give you as much time as possible because this is one of those topics that you've been prepping for a while. Like more that, I mean, usually it kind of seems like you pick a topic, you spend a week researching it. This one has kind of been one that you've been going back and forth on for a while and building up, right?
Yeah, I've been... And honestly, I've just had so much fun getting ready for this one because I've had like my notes is mostly just questions I've had that I've kind of like a question will pop in my mind and I'll go try to research the answer. And I've just learned so much and it's just such an exciting topic. And it's a topic I don't think we've ever really dedicated a whole episode to.
Those topics are becoming fewer and farther between. I'm actually, and for the record, I don't actually know what the topic is. I know you've just said you're excited about it.
So the topic is fat.
And you're the subject matter expert on that? I was halfway through a drink of water and my eyes lit up. I was like, oh,
yeah,
I got it down really quick.
Let's get all the fat jokes out of the way, Joe.
Yeah, in great taste, by the way. Always a good one, right?
Yeah, I'm mostly talking about experience right here.
No cheap shots here.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and the thing is, it seems like it's kind of its own subject, but it's amazing how all the stuff we normally talk about kind of is going to come back into play. It's like nothing we really do is in isolation when it comes to like health.
The point of this podcast is going to be ride a lot at zone two, make good choices, and eat a balanced diet, right? Like,
yeah, kind of.
Spoiler alert. But, and I'm curious, like, are we focusing on like fat as a nutrient as part of your diet or like body fat? Because we do talk about, we do exist in a weight sensitive sport. Like, this is something that, is it kind of all of this?
It's kind of all of that. Yeah. It's like, I would say mostly fat as a fuel would probably be what we're going to talk about mostly. But yeah, we're going to be talking about our body fat, if it's good or bad. Fat as a fuel, fat in our diet.
So out of the gates, let me throw out the word association with fat is not great. And I think especially for people like maybe even as young as me and like my age and up, when I was a kid, we had the food pyramid. I am that old, the actual food pyramid. I remember we had placemats that had like the black food pyramid on it. And at the very top of the food pyramid was the tiniest little triangle that was the fats triangle. I remember that every food in the store was reduced fat or fat-free. You'd see hysterical things like they'd be like, oh, look, these nerds are fat-free. Like it was just this thing you could apply to a lot of different stuff. But even now, like people, I think if you asked a random person on the street, hey, if I could reduce your body fat with a magical pill, would you take the pill? 99% of people would say yes. So I think the baseline perception that most of us are going into this with is fat is bad, fat should be avoided, and we don't want fat on our bodies. But then there's this kind of burgeoning, maybe like carnivore movement.
There's some people that kind of think the exact opposite.
Maybe fat is all we should be eating. So those are the two maybe forces that people have going into this, right?
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about that because there are some people, like there's two different polar extremes that you're hearing a lot about in, well, maybe the sports nutrition arena, but just in the nutrition arena
right
as a whole, you know, but so first, you know, we do talk about fat from time to time on this podcast, and just to kind of review some things that we probably already know about it, stuff we've probably already talked about, is that fat is a fuel. It's a very efficient fuel. And a lot of people kind of compare it to like a diesel fuel, where it's not going to make you super, super fast, but you can kind of go forever and ever and ever. And just as kind of a review. So like in aerobic metabolism, like each molecule of glucose produces about 32 ATP. Okay. In anaerobic, like in glycolysis, each molecule of glucose only produces net 2 ATP, you know, so that's way less efficient than aerobic energy. But if you're doing aerobic fat metabolism, each molecule of fat produces over 100 ATP.
So we talk a lot about pros being, you say fat adapted all the time, as if it's like the holy grail of what you can achieve as an athlete, right? Or being more, I guess,
well,
it's not a switch
that flips. We used to think that. It's getting less and less so. We'll talk about that in a sec, but yeah.
But that's kind of what you're getting into, right? Is that like ideally as an athlete, and you'd still maybe agree that like for most of the world tour guys we're talking about, most of the ladies winning World Cups, these are fat adapted athletes.
Yeah.
And you will probably refresh us on what that means at some point.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about that because Basically if you're able to use fat as a fuel, in a lot of ways, that's an indicator of being a healthy person with a healthy metabolism.
Okay.
So, as far as fat as a fuel, though, we have almost an unlimited supply of fat of storage that we're carrying around. You know, you could run multiple marathons with the amount of fat that even a thin person has on their body.
Not to take this to a morbid place, but like sometimes human beings end up in situations where they can't eat for a long time and they don't die you know, like if you don't have water, you die within a few days. People can survive on pretty minimal food for a remarkably long time, yeah. Right? Like people do starve to death eventually, but like I said, even for like a skinny person and especially for a not skinny person like yourself, right? I mean, you could survive decades, right? Yeah, I'm done.
You can keep them coming.
I don't know. I think fat jokes are especially like the whole poor taste, like especially on like an athletic podcast, that seems like punching.
Yeah. The whole time I'm preparing this, I'm like, oh, Joe's just going to have so much fun.
It's Michael Jordan playing on like the little Fisher Price pool hoop, you know, it almost isn't even fun. Almost.
Compare yourself to Michael Jordan?
Absolutely. Yes. Ask me again. See how much I hesitate. I don't remember what the point was.
Oh yeah. We're just a review of stuff we probably already know about fat is right. A fuel. It's also a really slow fuel. Like you can't really fuel high intense activities with fat.
You're not taking an olive oil gel on your way into a Nika race or a cross race, right?
Yeah. You're not burning fat when you're doing like a track sprint. An interesting thing is it's a very complex process, like multiple steps in oxidizing fat. takes a little while to get going. Like usually like once you start exercising, when you initially start, you're burning carbohydrate. After about 15, 20 minutes, those systems kind of get ramped up and then you start burning the fat. And there's like when you're using like carbs as fuel, there's some byproducts. When fat's your main fuel, there's like basically no byproducts. It's basically water and carbon dioxide. And so you're basically, as you burn fat, you breathe it out.
You're breathing out fat and you're sweating, yeah, you're, I'd imagine too.
You're breathing out your burritos is a phrase I've heard once.
Breathe out my burritos all the time. ask my wife about that.
But, so there's just some stuff that we've kind of talked about that aspect of fat before.
Fat too is very energy dense, right? Like doesn't a gram of fat have more calories than a gram of carbohydrate? That's a thing I'm remembering correctly from ninth grade health, right?
Yeah, it's got about, isn't it four per, it's about six? Nine versus four.
That's what it is. Yeah. And this is why we say like, I've heard people say before, I think more of the reasonable nutrition people be like, fat is not poison. It should not be scary. But if you're trying to lose weight, you should remember that like, you know, you eat a spoonful of butter, that's a ton of calories. It's not going to make you feel terribly full versus...
It's very, very calorie dense.
Very, you know,
Like on your salad, you know, like you can have this really, really low calorie salad.
Right.
And you look at how much, you know, you put 2 tablespoons of salad dressing on.
Boom, well, there you go.
All of a sudden there's a lot of calories in it. So, you know.
So, not poison. But like, and also just to get this out of the way really quick. Fat is not poison.
Yeah.
You do not need to avoid fat like it's cyanide, right?
Yeah, and that's definitely something we're...
Not like a spoiler alert, but like I hope that's something that you're not carrying around in your head.
And I think people nowadays don't... Like, if you grew up in like the 80s and 90s...
I would say even when I was a kid, this was like the prevailing
sentiment. Like, I remember you'd get like a... Like, it seemed like Swedish fish or something on the package would say a fat-free food.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, your box of Nerds would say fat-free, right? Which, if you have... a kindergarten understanding of how like that candy is made, like yes, there is no fat in this, that doesn't mean it's good for you, right? Or that you can say, oh, it's fat free as if that was like, oh, as long as it doesn't have fat in it, you're fine, right?
Yeah. And I think people are kind of wised up to that in general.
Yeah,
you know. But so, you know, and in talking about fat, it's kind of hard to really have this conversation without like including a conversation about carbohydrates, because really they kind of exist together in the world, you know?
Yeah.
So, and in nutrition, and specifically like in sports nutrition lately, there's kind of been like two really, really polar schools of thought that if you're listening to pretty much any podcast guest about nutrition, they're probably going to be in one camp or the other.
Yes.
You know, so like on one hand, we've got a lot of people that are really, really pushing the limits on what we can ingest in terms of carbohydrates per hour during exercise.
Right.
And like every time I hear someone come on, it's like 10 grams higher an hour.
Did it used to be that like 60 to 80 was like, holy smokes, right? And now you've got like, I know that there are Nike kids who are like, I can do 120 an hour. It's like, wow. And we've talked, we have talked before about how like there's an upper limit and it, we might have passed it.
And I don't know, because I do agree that there's this is a very interesting topic.
Yeah.
And it's something that has like benefited the pro Peloton.
Oh, yeah.
And there's, but I think it's been presented somewhat irresponsibly.
Yeah. Somewhat.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that they're just throwing out a number without weighing it against kilojoules or body size. You know, it's just like,
yep,
the bigger the better.
Which regardless. Is a good point that like I am twice the size of Jonas Vingegaard, right? Or like you could point out that like, you know, for a kid who's in, you know, first year of Junior Devo, trying to throw on those numbers, if it doesn't matter what, if Peter Sagan can do that, you know, you're a third his size. You shouldn't be, right?
Yeah. And that's why our, like we've talked about this in the past, because it is something I feel pretty strongly about, that the amount of carbohydrate you're using during exercise should be scaled to the amount of kilojoules you're producing.
There you go.
Yeah. And I honestly think that for most kids, they're not using enough. They're not taking advantage of it enough. But I think that if some 90-pound Nike kid just took Trainer Rhodes' advice and started shoving 130 grams an hour down their throat on a zone 2 ride, that's not good. You know, no. So
on the flip side, and I'm going to kind of steal your thunder here, because this is something I feel strongly about. Like one of the biggest health trends in the past years has been the keto diet, right? Which I'm totally jumping on your territory here, but I just,
that's where
say,
I was
like,
going next.
So. Well, I stole your segue. I carjacked your segue. Which is also another thing where like, hey, there's something interesting going on here. I think for a lot of people, especially people with like autoimmune disorders and stuff, like it's really promising. And I know that there are people out there who are like, I stopped eating carbs and I eat a diet where fat is a much higher percentage and I'm eating a ton of protein and maybe even like the carnivore diet. And these people do have impressive weight loss results, but, and I'm just going to immediately, in case that you like, these are not aerobic endurance athletes, I think almost at all. And maybe if you were like a permanent 90 hour a week desk jockey, that could be interesting, but I'm going to predict that you don't really fall into either camp and that moderation is usually the answer. Am I wrong? Am I just blowing up your whole episode here right in front of your eyes?
Well, thanks for listening. No. Yeah. Well, and you said that cause there's even endurance athletes that are probably a more accurate term is high fat, low carb.
Yeah.
Truly entering ketosis is a difficult state to get into.
Don't worry. They'll tell you all about it all the time. People give vegans a hard time. I want to throw out that I think the keto crowd I hear from way the heck.
And that's right. Like anytime someone is talking about sports nutrition, they're either one extreme or the other.
Well, I mean, that's the algorithm. You know, that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess anyone that comes on is going to talk about moderation. Like who would listen to that? You know, like who'd click on
apparently that? About 386 people a week is my answer to that. I think that is our rough average right now.
Okay.
There you go.
And actually a shout out to Fast Talk. They recently did episode 340, which talked about healthy fueling, which I really appreciated.
I'm sure they're glad to hear that. In case you're one of our handful of listeners.
So we do have these two pretty polar extreme camps.
Right.
Both sides have valid scientific arguments.
This is true. You can point to studies on either side that show good stuff. We should say out of the gates too, right?
Yeah. And we'll kind of talk about both a little bit. And obviously you guys can guess where I'm going to fall, but we'll first talk about simple carbohydrates, which let me just make this so clear that simple carbohydrates are the no-brainer fuel of choice for all endurance sports.
Yes.
Like I can't really think of an endurance sport other than like maybe an unsupported ultra endurance event where carbs wouldn't be your fuel of choice.
If you're riding 400 miles a day across continents. Maybe.
And you're unsupported and you know.
Right. Yeah. I should say. And so, then like Kipchoge famously was like when he ran his sub 2-hour marathon, like what did you eat? He said oatmeal. If you go onto any protein bus, you're going to find rice cookers and oatmeal and potatoes. And like this is not, I would say this is not controversial.
Yeah. So exactly. Yeah. And we are talking about fat today, but that doesn't mean carbs aren't king as far as endurance sports are concerned. So
people who will say, and like, I should say too, like I saw somebody, say on TikTok recently, why do so many people start their day with oatmeal? Oatmeal is horse food. And to that person, I would say, I'm so sorry you were born with an empty skull. Stop making it everybody else's problem. That is the most brain dead take. And again, the advice we give you guys is maybe different than the advice that would help a 90-hour-a-week desk jockey who is truly sedentary and needs to lose 100 pounds in the next 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe. But for you guys, like, the fear-mongering, I think about fat, and these days, honestly, I think there's as much or more fear-mongering about, like, don't eat white rice all the time. I'm like, I think this must be confusing if this is where a lot of your like,
oh, this is all going to be so clear by the end of the podcast though.
I kind of think, well, the competition is pretty incoherent. Like this is, these are a bunch of like truly catastrophically stupid people who are being rewarded by the algorithms right now.
So along with simple carbs, one reason they're vilified, and a good reason they're vilified, is they're really, really easy to overconsume, you know, and especially by sedentary people.
Oh yeah. Oh, you get a nice like pasta or something, like,
or like crackers and chips and stuff. Yeah. Like
you can eat 3,000 calories of buttery pasta pretty darn quick and not even realize it.
Or like my thing is like when I eat like Cheez-Its or something, like the more I eat, the hungrier I get. Like they don't ever fill me up. Like I won't be hungry and I'll have a few Ritz crackers, 'cause I just love Ritz crackers.
Yep.
And after eating a couple, I'm like hungrier.
Mm-hmm. Or like Oreos.
Yeah. So they're really easy to overconsume.
Yeah.
But as far as like, you know, so it's definitely a concern with like the sedentary population. Honestly, with the group we deal with, I'm more concerned about underutilization of carbohydrates than overutilization.
Because when you're 15 and burning 3,500 calories a day, you're fine.
Yeah. So
you probably don't need to worry about
that.
We
are really addressing a unique group. I mean, there's obviously, you know, once you get into your 20s and 30s and 40s,
it sucks.
The rules are going to change a little bit.
And for parents listening, again,
yeah,
if you and your doctor have decided that you have 20 pounds of weight that you could lose healthily, there's some differences here, but addressing our teenage endurance athlete population, you are not probably going to overdo it on the rice and potatoes.
Exactly. In fact, I'm, you know, we've talked before about how concerned we are about avoiding low energy availability and red S and so forth. So, don't be afraid of carbs as a youth athlete. Make sure you're getting enough is probably more important than anything else we're talking about today. But yeah, the bottom line is carbohydrates are without a debate kind of the fuel of choice for endurance athletes. And if you're using carbohydrates during exercise and within energy balance, there's not really any health risks associated. You know, as long as you're exercising, you're insulin sensitive, and you're in energy balance and so forth, they're not bad. We'll just make that clear. So that's a little kind of review on carbohydrates. Let's talk about the high fat, low carb diets now. And again, we're talking about this not because I'm endorsing it, just because it's out there.
It's an extremely popular thing.
It's out there and they're
pushed really hard.
But bear with me a second, because there's actually some principles in this.
Oh yeah.
That are valid.
100%.
And for some people could drastically improve their health, you know? So
yes,
it's worth being familiar with some of these principles, and some of them actually can kind of apply to what we're doing and make things better for us. But, so, So let's talk, as far as a high carb, low fat diet goes, kind of the extreme or the holy grail is the keto diet. And basically with that is you eliminate your carbohydrates and replace those calories with fat. And to really get into a state of ketosis, your carbohydrate intake has to be really, really low, like 20 to 50 grams a day.
Which is basically nothing.
That's basically like you would have to almost just try to eliminate carbs, and those would just be incidental carbs that
you accidentally encounter in other foods, basically.
You didn't realize were in the foods you were eating.
Because, I mean, how many grams of carbs are in an apple? Probably about that, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah. And that's, we'll talk about that in a sec. But so the keto, ketosis is basically an evolutionary response where our liver creates ketones that our brain can use in the place of glucose during starvation. Because I guess our ancestors had to deal with winter sometime,
Right. And,
we're grains and, well, not grains, we're plants weren't growing that they could eat, So,
right.
And in ketosis, the body actually creates its own glucose. And there's kind of a fancy word for this. It's kind of fun to say gluconeogenesis.
Just like the gluconeogenesis I knew in school, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. We're in Utah. People have weirder names than that. Give me a break.
And this glucose can actually be stored as glycogen. Now, obviously, a keto athlete's not going to have nearly the same glycogen stores as a carbohydrate-utilizing athlete, but it does exist.
Keto athletes aren't winning the tour anytime soon.
But we can make our own glucose in, during periods of starvation, which I thought was kind of interesting. And if you are in ketosis, your body just gets really, really, really good at using fat as a fuel.
Which would be cool. It's a thing we like.
Like
we talk about this.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing.
Your body doing is cool and good.
So there's some pros, and the biggest pros are one is under the ketogenic diet, you can actually lose a lot of weight really fast.
Yes. This is true. That's an actual thing.
And there's no debate. If you're carrying along a lot of extra fat on your body and you lose it, that's a good thing.
Heck yeah. There are I can't imagine an instance where that would be bad. Right.
The other pro is that it's kind of related to having too much. Well, not kind of, it's directly related to having too much excess body fat is it can help with it can help manage diabetes and different metabolic syndromes. So all good things, right?
All good things.
Yeah. I do wonder though, if with where people are starting to use the word, doctors are starting to prescribe Ozempic now. Mm. I wonder if you're going to see less doctors encouraging the ketogenic diet.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't go to med school, so I shouldn't comment, but hey, everybody else does. So here we go. I would say probably. I think also because doing keto would be laborious. That would be a huge, that would almost have to be your whole life.
So those were the pros. Let's talk about the cons, because you just kind of led us there. The cons are one, it's not sustainable.
No. Unless it's your job to be keto on Instagram, I don't think anybody's pulling it off all the time, right?
No. It seems like it's something that people kind of use to initially lose a lot of weight. But then I think any type of diet, if it's not sustainable, you're just going to get it back.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we
should say, and again, people love keto and it does work for certain people in certain situations. They are not Nike racers.
Yeah.
And
I think, we've definitely kind of established that, but it's not really for us, but there are a reason that people do it and it's good for them. But the cons are it's not sustainable. But then when you think about it, it lacks a lot of plant micronutrients, like a lot of vitamins and minerals.
Well, you know their response to this, by the way.
I don't actually.
Do you not know their response?
Like take a vitamin pill?
No, because the big pharma something, something, something. My supplements are okay, but nobody else's. Some incoherent garbage like that. No, it's organs. you have to eat liver and eyeballs and stuff.
Oh, gross. Okay.
Yeah. They're just saying, they'll be like, I had a polar bear brain smoothie with breakfast and that has more vitamin A than a carrot. You know, like that kind of like, I wish I was kidding. I really wish I was kidding. Have you ever heard of Liver King? I know I know you probably can't take this anyway, but like if you need to drop your IQ a few points. And then it came out that like, I don't know. Just,
I got
that. Haha. Well, yeah, barely. It came out. Look this guy up if you're bored and you're listening to this, you're bored. So look up Liver King. And then this guy, he was busted for steroids, and that's how he got looking the way he does. And he was like, oh, okay. He has like this whole like food
thing. You won't ever get busted for steroids.
Get it? Yeah, because I'm too sneaky. I don't know.
So anyhow, let's enough about Liver King.
You told me before this, like, hey, make this interesting. And I'm like, and every time I do, you're like, why are you making it interesting? I'm like, I don't know, because I'm bored.
Okay.
So anyway.
So anyhow,
is this clear yet?
Another con, back to cons of the keto diet, is it lacks fiber. It actually achieving ketosis is very difficult.
Yeah.
Most people that attempt it really are just doing a high fat, low carb diet.
And their calories are lower and that's why they're losing weight.
Yeah. One thing that I kind of found as I was looking into this is like, you know, we're encouraged to eat healthy fats. A lot of the healthy fats have a lot of carbs in them also, you know, other than like other than fatty fish, but like nuts and avocados, they actually have quite a few carbs in them also. So that kind of makes it like if they ate one avocado that day, they'd be at their carb limit.
Yeah. Kiss ketosis goodbye.
Yeah. But I think the biggest thing is like there are healthy fats. They're neutral fats, but there's a lot of unhealthy fats. And we're going to talk about this a little more in a second, but I think a lot of people, when they think keto, they think like steaks, bacon and butter all day long, you know, and you know, you might lose weight, but like a lot of people that do this diet have really, really high cholesterol. So
we should say too, that like, I can't imagine not having fiber in my diet, and fiber is a carbohydrate. I think those people must have long bathroom breaks at work all the time. I can't, you know, I think there's a lot of,
I think they're like, and there are some plants that they eat that don't have a lot of carbohydrate, like broccoli. They can eat a lot of broccoli. It doesn't have, it's really low carb, high fiber. So there are some, but they have to be careful which vegetables they eat, and they probably don't eat any fruit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bummer, because fruit's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, another major con is it really, I just can't think how it could improve your performance as an athlete unless you're coming from a really bad place.
Yeah.
You know, then I could see it.
So on this one, basically, if your doctor tells you keto's right for you, keto's right for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where the camp we're in on this one?
Yeah. So, you know, and like a lot of people kind of like will say, well, you know, it's nice to be fat adapted so you don't have to like carry fuel with you on long events, and you know, it's like most of the big events you do, there's like aid stations, and there's,
can't imagine doing very well in those events either. I gotta throw out like, I don't know, that seems like a stretch to me. Keegan carries lots of food with him and that's good enough for me.
Okay, so fat, is it like, is it a friend or a foe? Well, you kind of started talking about this earlier, but really the answer is obviously it kind of depends.
That's a tool.
Yeah.
Is a hammer a friend or a foe? I don't know. Are you hitting someone's head or a nail? Like, ta-da!
Wow.
That was like the most cogent metaphor we've ever used on this podcast. I'm going to give myself that award.
So, yeah. So just like carbs, they can be good or bad. You know, it really kind of just depends. Obviously, having excess body fat is not healthy. But have you ever heard the phrase, and you're going to hear this a lot of times from the keto people that kind of push the keto, diet, is that like fat doesn't make you fat.
Yes. And this is true. That is kind of a like almost like a backlash to the 90s. Fat is like the, you know, as long as the food doesn't have fat in it, you can eat as much of it as you want. Right. That, oh, you're eating fat, so that's why you're fat. Right.
Yeah.
So it's not untrue.
It's not untrue, but like, fat isn't guaranteed to make you fat, but fat can make you fat.
Excess calories will make you fat.
That's
fat has a lot of calories. Yeah. Those are two true facts.
Yeah. I promise I could gain weight using fat.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sure you could.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it just comes down to if we're consuming more calories than we're using, that we're going to gain weight. Yeah. Ultimately, fat is how our body stores excess calories, and that can come in the form of eating too many carbs or eating too much fat, or kind of more often kind of a combination of the two.
I'm really quick. I'm going to totally derail everything. I'm curious. I hear a lot of these people say too with carbs, like, oh, well, those are going to spike your blood sugar or make you more hungry or like this, or they talk a lot about like high glycemic foods. And I'd imagine there's maybe some truth there. Do you think there's maybe for the parents listening to this? Cause I tell people that like my winter diet is different than my summer diet. Right. I'm kind of in winter diet mode right now. I mean, a lot of, you know, like I am eating like zero fat Greek yogurt for breakfast a lot of the time. Like, is there something to be said nutritionally for the whole like blood sugar spike, that's why carbs are poison notion?
Well, yeah, yes and no. And we're like in a second, we're going to be talking about
if
like.
If you're going to do this later, we can do that later. I didn't know if this is a thing you'd want to address because I hear this all the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes and no, because like, well, one, simple carbohydrates are just like we talked about earlier, just super easy to overconsume.
Right.
You know, like, but like if you had, you know, like say you ate 3000 calories of, I don't know, let's say sausage, steak, eggs, and a little bit of broccoli. And 3,000 calories of, we'll say, Cheez-Its. I don't think you're one person probably wouldn't gain more weight than the other, but one person would be really, really full.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be able to eat for like a day.
Yeah.
Right. Versus and then, like the Cheez-Its, I could probably eat again in an hour.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah. I think that's a big part of it. And we'll talk a little bit in a second about just like insulin and how that kind of.
Okay.
Kind of comes into it. But I think a lot of it is just the simple carbs are really easy to overconsume. Now, we've talked in the past too about fructose and how that can signal fat storage. And, you know, we kind of did almost a whole podcast on that. So that's kind of an interesting aspect of why like added sugar is, you have to be really, really careful with that. But yeah, so, well, why don't we just talk about like why excess energy? So, well, oh, one thing I was going to mention too, is that like a really good way to get excess of calories is when fats and carbs are combined.
Mm.
You know, that's like potato chips.
Oh yeah.
You know, you got like a lot of fats, a lot of carbs, a lot of salt. They're super, super palatable. Like I swear those type of foods make you more hungry as you eat them. They're never going to fill you up, but they're just loaded with calories, have like no nutrients. And I think it's like foods like that, you know, and it basically almost just comes down to a lot of the processed foods are the ones that have like, they taste really good, have lots of calories, very little nutrients. They're not really going to fill you up.
Well, like we fundamentally agree with these people. Like, yeah, that shouldn't be a significant portion of your diet, but they're not poison. Like I do kind of want to be clear that like,
if you're in an energy deficit, these things are great.
Yeah. You know, like if you're having a bad day and you need you a Starbucks, or if it's, you're at the birthday party, have a Dorito, like yeah. Don't be a weirdo, but it's not, but you know, you shouldn't be, you're going to have a really hard time out exercising, eating that way for like the adults listening. This is something I've found. I can't outride the way I want to eat.
And I used to think I could.
Yeah. I think without this being my full-time job, I don't think I can.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So let's talk about like why consuming excess energy is bad. So, you know, you've heard of insulin, right?
Oh yeah.
It's a signaling hormone that our pancreas sets out to do its job. Basically what insulin's job is like our cells have these receptors. Insulin will travel through our body and tells these receptors in our cells to allow fuel to enter to either be stored or used as energy. Now, what happens is once our cells are kind of already full of energy, the insulin will come out and say, hey, more energy's coming. Open your doors, let more in. And the cells are kind of like, no, sorry, we're already full. And so the pancreas sends more insulin out into the blood, and eventually the cells will take up more, but it takes more and more insulin to be able to do that once the cells are already full of energy. And an interesting thing is if a lot of insulin is present in your bloodstream, you become less likely to use fat as a fuel. And when your insulin's low, you're more likely to use fat as a fuel. So when your insulin's high, you're going to favor using carbohydrates as energy. When your insulin's low, you're going to be better at metabolizing fat for energy. And so what happens is, like, the insulin's used to keep our blood sugar low. And initially, you know, as our cells become full, is they're full of fat, basically, and our pancreas has to keep sending out more and more insulin to keep our blood sugar low. Initially, that keeps it in check, but eventually our body just becomes more and more insensitive to it, and we keep having to use more and more insulin, and we become more and more insensitive to it. And when that starts happening, then our blood sugar starts getting high. It leads to all other, like a whole lot of other downstream complications, like high blood pressure. when our liver becomes fatty, we can develop high cholesterol. And so it kind of just starts this kind of cascade of like a lot of bad things.
And a lot of people in the first world, at least, you know, in like the US and Canada and Europe and stuff, like, have diets that lead to this, right? Where like a lot of them are going to be diabetic and have high blood pressure and fatty liver. And so like, this is a real problem, we should say. Yeah. Not so much for the people listening to this statistically, right? But,
and I think a lot of people, because, you know, we all know that kind of diabetes is like high blood sugar.
Right.
Once it gets over a certain point, you're diagnosed with diabetes. Once it's at a slightly lower point, you're kind of diagnosed with prediabetes, which just means you've got so much blood sugar in your blood. And that's really, a lot of people kind of think that like the glucose is the problem, and you just need to avoid glucose and you're fine. But really that more is just kind of a symptom of a much bigger problem. And basically, like, diabetes is when it's basically a disorder of fat metabolism, you know, and then the high blood sugar is just kind of a symptom of it. So, okay. So just a few things to just kind of reemphasize here, that excess body fat is essentially just having a surplus of energy stored. But fueling with carbs, even at really, really high amounts, there probably aren't any health implications as long as you're doing it within energy balance. And for athletes that are doing the correct amount of workload, there's really probably no health implications of fueling with carbs.
Yeah. You know. Especially if you're like listening to this. But, you know, if we had a rider who was like, oh, you know, twice a week I'm doing a 30-minute ride on Wasatch Boulevard and back, and I'm going to stop at the gas station and have 7 Twinkies and 8 Snickers, you're like, okay, well, that's not within your energy balance. You don't really need that. On the flip side, when Helena or the Gibbons or anybody, it seems like 20 people have Everested this winter, including you, right? Like, especially for them, like, if the Gibbons or Helena had been like, I'm going to eat 8 Twinkies, you'd been like, great, can you? Awesome. That is almost as many as you need to eat this lap, right? Like, there's just no way you could possibly. And like, for pro cyclists, we've heard people say a lot that, like, professional cycling is an eating competition, and just practically, you're never going to overeat on the bike. Like, like, if you're doing point to point, has anybody ever overeaten on the bike during point to point? Like, probably not. It would be hard to unwrap that many things.
I don't think you could overeat at a race pace, but you could overeat on a zone 2 ride.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
It's got to be scaled to your kilojoules.
Yeah.
You know, and so in general, like, when it comes to like weight management, I would say that diet is probably the key.
Yeah.
But interesting, when it comes to like, because we talked about like becoming insensitive to insulin. I think the key from what I understand to really remaining insulin sensitive is exercise. Because when you exercise, your cells are able to absorb energy independent of insulin. And so obviously combining diet and exercise is kind of the golden ticket, you know, because it's going to help keep you at a healthy body weight, and it's going to help you remain insulin sensitive. So there's a term metabolic flexibility. I don't know if you've heard that tossed around.
I am in funner circles than you, so no, I have not.
And so this is the ability to metabolize both fuels effectively and kind of switch back and forth as necessary. And while carbs are really kind of, like we said, they're essential for performance.
I'm going to call this episode essential per performance.
There's some really good reasons to not become over reliant on carbohydrates. Obviously there's some health reasons like weight management, body composition, blood sugar control, mitochondrial function and disease prevention. Because like I was listening to something with Inigo San Milan, and he was talking about like, there's some sedentary people that are just really, really metabolically inefficient, that are just sitting around all day, just sitting on the couch, burning carbs rather than fat. And they're producing more lactate sitting on a couch than like the pro Peloton is just cruising around, you know, which I thought was just mind blowing, you know, like levels of lactate that would probably just kind of exhaust a pro cyclist or what some of these people are experiencing just sitting around watching TV.
And that's a really good thing to consider before you make like a moral judgment of somebody who's struggling with weight management or who doesn't exercise very often, especially like where I think the majority of people on this team came from a fairly athletic family who's always skied, and your parents took you hiking from the second you were a fetus, right? That like, to get off the couch to riding a bike is probably a bigger effort than it would take to get any of you to a top 10 at point to point. You know, like that's something that requires a huge, huge amount of effort. And so like, I do think as someone who like was kind of came into this from a not fit place and got fit doing it, I think the majority of riders who do this were probably in fine shape before they started mountain biking. Do remember that like before you like look at someone and be like, oh, well, I'm so much better than them. Like, look how unfit they are and look how fit I am. You know, you got to remember like that's a really interesting thing to consider, is that person like just their day-to-day life might be as physically exhausting as yours for as much as you're riding. And then the thought of adding strenuous aerobic exercise on top of that, it would be pretty daunting. Like if I told you that you needed to go for a run after every ride, you'd be like, oh, that run doesn't sound like a lot of fun right now. I want to go home and sit on the couch. Same kind of thing. I do think that's worth chewing on.
No, I like that. So some other reasons to maybe consider not being so dependent on carbohydrates is improved endurance. You know, if you're able to do more of the work that you're already doing using fat rather than carbohydrates, you can just save those for kind of a special occasion and for hard efforts and just do more of the cruising along, burning fat. That's never a bad thing. You know, there's the ability to conserve glycogen for the harder efforts. And another thing is like, I'm one that I think has always been over reliant on carbohydrates. I love carbohydrates. I crave carbohydrates. Like when I think about like the things I enjoy eating most, they all involve carbohydrates. And like, I was thinking about like, you know, I don't ever just like crave a piece of chicken, but I do find myself like craving like chocolate chip cookies and Ritz crackers and corn chips and tortilla chips. And, you know, I haven't eaten for a while. I'm getting hungry just kind of talking about this, you know, but a lot of these simple sugars are very, very addictive, and they can be unsatisfying. And you know, we've mentioned before, especially with fructose, there's definitely some added problems when that gets thrown into the mix. If the fructose doesn't come in the form of fruit, you know, if it gets removed from the fruit, and actually many elite endurance athletes I've learned have, they actually will have pre-diabetic levels of blood sugar.
Really?
And interestingly, because of their body composition and because of their activity, they remain insulin sensitive so that they don't really experience any of the complications. But that is kind of pause for thought, you know, that maybe, you know, maybe we don't want to be
food for thought, or it makes you pause for thought.
What did I say?
You said it's maybe pause for thought. And I don't know. You need to pick a lane.
I'm just combining expressions to.
That's okay.
Make sure I use as many expressions.
So, all right, gang, we use as many expressions as we can today. Go forth and do well.
So, I can't even remember what were we talking about.
Eventually, with like the pros, and this is part of the reason that like professional cycle, like any professional cycling team, even the kind of smaller ones, will have a team doctor, because you need to have like a specific doctor that understands, like, oh, hey, if Jonas Vingegaard chucks up a blood sugar test that says this, he is not pre-diabetic. He's probably fine from this perspective. These are the special considerations for him. Like, again, this is a whole different set of rules that you're playing by when you're dealing with like a professional cyclist, is what you're saying there, right?
Yeah, like it's a little bit different, but I'm also saying that maybe sometimes we are like I've heard the phrase, a lot of cyclists can be fit but unhealthy.
This, and I've said before on this podcast that Tour de France riders are not necessarily the healthiest people in the world, that they are making a health sacrifice to be as fast as they are, right?
And that's kind of what leads us to the next part of our discussion, because I don't think we really have to compromise. Like, I honestly think we can have the best of both worlds. Like, I don't think that when it comes to fueling, you have to sacrifice health for performance. And let's talk about how, because I think this is really cool. And that's, and basically it's how we are training our metabolic flexibility. And there's three things you just got to remember, super simple. The one is race high. Two is train moderately. And three is live healthy. And I'll repeat those again in a second, but we're basically just periodizing our nutrition. You know, just kind of like you know, we use the term periodization, which means, you know, you kind of do one type of training in the winter, something else leading up to racing, and then you take a break after racing, and then you kind of repeat, you know, and you do intervals sometime, but not like every single day. And you're not just doing the same thing every single day when it comes to training. And same with nutrition, it needs to be periodized. So you race high, you train moderately, and you live healthy. So, and I really think that if you do this well, you don't have to choose between health and performance. And if you're doing this, it's more healthy, but it doesn't sacrifice performance. You know, it's just, I think this is just kind of a no-brainer thing to apply to what we're doing. So let's talk about racing high first. And this is the stuff we talk about all the time. You know, we talk about like carb loading a day or two before your big race. Do you carb load just for no reason?
Well, do or should?
Should you?
Should. No.
No.
Do sometimes. Sometimes, yeah. Depends on the kind of day I have.
Yeah. You know, you're fueling before, during, and after events. And this is where, like, if you are the type of athlete that you would basically want to, on longer events, consume as many carbohydrates as you can metabolize based on your, you know, based on who you are. And that number varies greatly for people. You know, and some people can be up to 120 grams, and that's awesome. I can't.
My tummy is too weak.
Well, and it's not my tummy. I can't do enough work to justify that. Like,
well, that's
there's, too. And there's a difference between tolerating and metabolizing.
I have unlimited limitations, let me tell you. There's a lot of reasons.
Yeah, and so just really, you know, like if it's a race, you've got to be fueled. And one drawback I forgot to mention about the keto diet is like a lot of times people, like keto athletes, will try to like, they'll be keto, but then when it's time for their big race, you know, their body forgets how to use carbohydrates.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't really benefit them, you know, so, but yeah, race high, like use carbohydrates to win races. And in like your energy demands during a race basically mean that like those carbohydrates are pretty much just getting burned right up.
Yeah, you're breathing them right back out.
You've
right?
got like a really hot furnace firing. Yeah, and
you're throwing a newspaper into a really hot bonfire, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, so I don't think there's major health implications for fueling races and hard workouts.
You shouldn't be eating a sis on your way to fourth period though.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also fuel key workouts. No, a key workout, you don't really need to fuel like exactly how you're going to fuel a 6-hour race, but you do need to come, you know, with your blood sugar sufficient that you're going to feel good during the race and that, you know,
during the workout.
During the workout, yeah. Thank you. So yeah.
See,
so
that's, I do listen. Only for your mistakes.
But. So, yeah. So, race high. Now, train moderately. What do you think this might mean?
I'll tell you what I hope it means. Because I hate when we conflate moderation and median. Like, I think to a lot of people, moderation just means, well, draw a line down the middle and do that. And I heard somebody say one time that if somebody came up to you and said, I am going to eat this bar of soap, and you said, well, that's crazy, you shouldn't do that. And they said, okay, well, I'll be moderate and I will cut the bar of soap in half and then eat it. That if that's moderation, I'm not interested in moderation. I think moderation is a beautiful and difficult topic because it requires discretion and you have to make a good educated decision about what direction you're going to go in. And I think for different people, it's going to mean different things. I can tell you that for me, training moderately right now means every spare second you have to throw at the bike, you should.
And we're talking about in regards to fueling.
Okay, in regards to fueling, right? So I should say, like for me, that's how I approach training versus like a kid who's 15 and has all the time in the world shouldn't throw all the time he has at the bike, right? In the same way, I think like eating moderately, like you said, you have to figure out what your need is and try to be in balance with that. And like you said, for most of these Nike kids, you're probably underdoing it more often than overdoing it, right? I think on the flip side, you see the meme where it's like, oh, 30 minutes into every training ride, you're at the cafe having a pain au chocolat and like a espresso or whatever. And that's probably overdoing it.
Yeah. So train moderately. It's kind of like,
I flubbed that response, didn't I?
A little bit.
I have no idea. I didn't know what you meant. I didn't know you said train moderately. I'm like, okay, this is what I think.
You look you look kind of bored and like disengaged. So I'm like, maybe I'll ask him a question.
Well, that's why you don't. So I've learned this as a teacher. Asking the bored, disengaged kid a question is not always a good strategy.
Okay, so if I train moderately.
I answered the question train moderately. I didn't answer it in the particular context you were looking for because
yeah, I'm referring to like how like you should be fueled at a moderate level when you're training.
Well, and I answered that in my second save my butt part of the answer. So there you okay. go.
So yeah, so, and what I kind of mean by this is like, if you treat, like, say you're going out on a 3 or 4 hour zone 2 ride and you're shoving 120 grams of carbs down your throat an hour, it actually is going to negate a lot of the adaptations to that zone 2 ride. Mm. Because, and I've heard people say, well, I do it because it makes me feel better and it makes me perform better. But let me just throw out there that our goal of zone 2 rides isn't to feel good or perform well.
Yeah. The fastest zone 2 ride would almost be like, I don't know, like painting a beautiful picture. The fastest, like the speed isn't the point there. It's kind of the process, right?
Well, you can paint fast. That's kind of cool. But anyhow,
speed painting. Are we that bored? That'll be our next episode. Speed painting. I think all painting for me is speed painting, but carry
on. It's never good. But yeah. So like, yeah, really the goal of a zone 2 ride is certain adaptations. And those adaptations are, namely, one is to be able to metabolize fat better. And if your blood is caro syrup and your glycogen stores are just completely full and you're just over carbed up, your body's going to prefer burning carbohydrates.
As it should.
As it should.
Right? So it's designed to run.
Which really kind of negates some of the benefits of that zone two ride.
Now, but hang on. Should I just go and starve my zone two rides?
Absolutely not.
There you go. That was like my first useful setup all day. There
you go. Yeah, because you need some carbohydrates on board because for several reasons. One is just the way the whole electron transport chain and Krebs cycle work. A lot of the substrates that are involved in that process are like the pyruvate is kind of a byproduct of.
You feel so smart right now, don't you? I'm sorry. I was like, if he uses one more big word and then you hit me with pyruvate. Like, but
those all come from carbohydrates, basically.
Someone in Pleasant Grove kissed a baby named that on the head and then went out the door to sell solar door to door. Like, I'm sorry, pyruvate is not a real word. That's fake.
But these are all substrates of using carbs as fuel.
As we all know.
Which helps. And basically, it's kind of like, let's see, an analogy would be like...
Oh, boy.
So fat burns in a small fire of carbohydrates.
Okay.
Okay. But it doesn't burn in a large fire of carbohydrates.
Okay.
But you have to have some carbohydrates present for fat to oxidize effectively. You know, and so like if you like totally like run out of glycogen and your blood sugar's low and you bonk, your fat metabolism also goes down.
Right.
So... You know, when we're burning fuels, we're always kind of burning a mix of fuels, you know, and like at the lower intensities, the percentage is higher of fat. And as the intensity gets higher and higher, that percentage goes down and starts favoring carbohydrates more. but if we run out of carbohydrate availability, we lose our ability to metabolize fat. So you really do. You do need to fuel your zone two rides. You just don't need to fuel them at the levels you would for racing. Yeah. You know, and if you overdo it, you're going to kind of negate some of the benefits of that training. But you definitely don't want to do it like, so you're going to bonk.
Yeah, the hard thing about moderation is it takes work. Like, being an extremist is really easy. I think any race to the bottom ends with you being an extremist. Like,
moderation means
making choices all the time and not... And again, I think straight down the middle is its own weird kind of extremism too, that like... You're going to have to look at what you're doing and make a good decision based on the education you've worked to achieve.
Yeah. It's kind of like the, it depends. And, you know, and that answer is always really boring, and it's kind of boring if you're not some kind of extreme, but usually that's where the best solutions usually are found. So, another thing with making sure you do have carbohydrates available while you're fueled while you're exercising is we don't use protein for fuel if carbohydrates are present, you know, so another reason you don't want to bonk. And so, yeah, I, especially for youth athletes, I would never really encourage fasted training. I think there are some cases for it, but not for anyone listening to this
not
podcast.
Not for you guys. Don't try it.
But one way I would suggest fueling moderately when you're training is to, you know, rather than like shoving straight sugar down your throat, try adding some nuts and some lower glycemic carbohydrates to your fueling, you know, like
examples
of nuts.
Yes. Like list different nuts. What are some other foods? You said lower glycemic foods.
Okay. Like whole grains.
How could you possibly think I was talking about nuts there? I don't know if that's what you're thinking about all the time. But... Sorry. I don't know, that was a ridiculously cheap shot. Another dunk in the kiddie pool. Where was I going with this?
Yeah, like,
are we saying like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
Or like an apple or a banana or some berries or an apple.
Someone's writing this down. Do I write it again? Erase the first apple. Write the second one.
Okay, so
replace the apple with other nuts.
Yeah. And then, you know, along this, just making sure that when you're doing this type of ride where you're after these types of benefits that you keep it disciplined and, you know.
Actually like, do a zone two ride, not a Joe's O2 ride.
Like, yeah, once there's a lot of lactate present, you stop metabolizing fat as well. So, oh, and another thing too, like we pointed out earlier, that like when you, you know, it takes a few minutes for your fat oxidation to kind of ramp up, which is another, like, you know, when you're doing a lot of your zone two training to try and keep it, avoid the starts and stops a lot. So you don't have to ramp that up as much, I guess. But so, and then the last one, so we've got race high, train moderately, and we're talking about fueling. But the last one is live healthy. And this is just like what you do when you're not training. Like your diet when you're not training should definitely not be the same diet as when you're doing a 4-hour ride in Park City. There should be.
Yeah. When you're just putting in 20 hours a week over the summer, cause you got nothing to do versus like it's finals week and it's December and you haven't touched a bike in a week. Like you do have different needs, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, it's like if you're like, you think about like, you don't want to just like wake up, eat pancakes and orange juice, and then, you know,
I don't want to, or you don't, are you sure?
have a bunch of bowls of cereal, have a few sisses and shot blocks, and then not ride that day. You know, that'd just obviously be
shy of the last part about sisses and shot blocks. Like, I don't know. Sounds like a nice Sunday. No, but no, point taken. Right.
Yeah.
I'll say like for me and more for the kind of like maybe mid 20s on up crowd. Like I'm eating a lot of like low fat Greek yogurt, a ton of fruits and vegetables, as much fiber as I can get, protein bars, you know, like versus during the summer, like this summer I was like working a contender on my feet all day. And I was riding like 2 to 3 hours every, like, especially when Tessa was in Canada for like a month and that's all I had to do. I was like, my watch regularly says like 4,500 calories a day, 5,000 calories a day. It's like, eat whatever you want, eat whatever you need to keep. I'd go to Smith's and buy 2 bagels and just eat them on my way to Shoreline to go try to get a couple hours of riding in. Right. That like your nutrition's going to look total. I mean, I transitioned to a tostada from a burrito at Cafe Rio this time of year. Like there's a lot of changes I make.
You're periodizing it.
Yeah.
So along with just kind of living healthy is seeking out healthy fats. Cause we talked earlier about how like some fats are good. I'd say some fats are neutral. Some fats should be avoided. And I think healthy fats kind of have to be, you kind of have to seek after them because really like they, like when you say they're good for you, these are really good for you. But they're kind of not easy to get sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear about the mono and polyunsaturated fats, you know, like your monounsaturated fats, like your nuts, your olive oils, your avocados, try to eat more of those. Like I said, try to fuel some of your rides with nuts and so forth. Your polyunsaturated, like your fish, your fatty fish, like salmon, you know, salmon's a little more expensive. You know, especially if you get it at like a restaurant or something, it's going to be more expensive.
Canned salmon nutritionally the same?
I don't know.
It's not. It doesn't taste nearly as good, but it still tastes fine.
I imagine it's probably fine. I'm sure it's.
I'm going to research this. Well, I'm still listening as much as I have been.
But because some of the benefits of these healthier fats are they help lower cholesterol. They're good for brain function. They can help lower inflammation. They're good for vitamin. Can we edit that?
Nope. What do you think?
I didn't think so.
You learn how to use the program, then you make it all the edits you want. This is a problem you've brought.
Vitamin absorption, and it's necessary for hormone production, especially testosterone, and blood sugar regulation. And if you are the type that are kind of flirting with low energy availability or red S, it's a great way to introduce more calories into your diet.
Can confirm, by the way, canned salmon supposedly is nutritionally identical.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Stupid. That was going to be my expensive salmon.
That was going to be my guess.
Yeah.
As long as it's wild caught canned salmon.
Yeah. Right. Link in bio. but yeah, it appears to be the same. I will say too, and this is a crusade I've been on. this doesn't have to be expensive either. Like, you don't have to go out and have fresh salmon for dinner every single night. Like, you can,
unless you can.
If you can, well, okay. Let's say really
every other night.
And in this sport, sure, a lot of you can, but you don't. That is, there's ways to, you know, like I'm a teacher, right?
Yeah, like we buy it frozen.
Yeah, frozen, like canned fish is great. Frozen vegetables, I'll say again, like you can buy a meal worth of frozen vegetables for a buck at Walmart. Like, you don't, and it's the same. And people who tell you it's aren't stupid and elitist.
So those are your healthy fats. Some more fats you hear about a lot. And a lot of times people consider these like those mono and polyunsaturated, the healthy fats, and then saturated is the unhealthy fats, but that's not necessarily true.
Yeah.
There's some saturated fats that, like dairy, cheese, butter, they're fine. You don't want to go crazy.
Just energy balance more than anything, probably.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. As long as you can do it and remain in energy balance, which almost every high school kid I know somehow can. It's not fair. Those are fine. Red meats, they have the longer chains in their fatty acids, and they're a little more. I'd say you need to use a little more moderation with them, but I would not cut them out because
red meat's great for you in a lot of ways.
It's so good for you in a lot of ways. Like a lot of the B vitamins and iron.
Tons of nutrients.
And, yeah. So
most of the girls listening to this are probably iron deficient, right?
A lot of athletes are.
Yeah.
Like, iron deficient. So yeah. I wouldn't eliminate it, but maybe like once or twice a week.
Yeah. Have some steak.
Unless you're Andrew Preston, you can have burgers all you want and be insanely
still
fast.
So mad at him. I'm still hurting from last Wednesday. That was messed up.
Yeah.
Come to Team Zwift, by the way. Lots
of fun. For some reason, like Andrew has got me so addicted to hamburgers. Like I think about hamburgers all the time. He went to like at his last, for his school dance, they went to like In-N-Out and he ordered like four patties on his burger. Which is kind of impressive.
Oh, to be young. I know I'm still technically young, but it doesn't feel like it when I'm riding with these guys.
And as far as fats that aren't good, you know, when you combine, when there's fats in processed foods, that can be kind of dangerous.
Like when people always like complain about like seed oils, like, and there's still just not any great evidence that they're bad. I'm like, yeah, usually the foods they're in aren't great for you because they're incredibly like calorie dense and are kind of empty, crappy foods. But you know, like it's kind of like with high fructose corn syrup. Like, no, it's not poison, but if it's in a food, it's probably not a food.
It's probably a cheap food. Yeah.
It's probably not a food that should make up a significant chunk of your diet, right?
Yeah. And then deep fried foods.
Yeah. Which I don't know. Deep fried foods have never been, I mean, they're good.
Oh, they're good.
But they're not, I don't know. Deep fried foods have never been like that hard for me to say no to. Like a lot of sweets are hard for me to say no to. Cereal's hard for me to say no to.
French fries, chimichangas. Holy cow, those are so good.
Even fries. I'm kind of like, no, I can take or leave a lot of fries.
I haven't eaten for
a while. You look like you take a lot of them. You didn't even take. I gave that to you on a
silver platter. Oh, see, I'm a nice person though.
Well, well, there you go.
I was just thinking, I haven't eaten for a long time. This podcast is making me so hungry. I'm going to go eat some healthy fats after this. But yeah, again, just as far as like living healthy, getting enough protein. Protein is something you kind of have to go out of your way to get enough of for most people. Fiber. I can't say enough good things about fiber.
Ridiculous amounts of protein
good,
and fiber. Over
good for your
especially.
Microbiome.
Oh yeah.
It helps regulate blood sugar. Lots of cool things about fiber. Fruits and vegetables. Basically, somehow this episode's turned into Zone 2 and the No Duh Diet. You know, and I actually heard someone that was talking about the Mediterranean diet. And as they were describing it, because they've kind of taken the wine out of the Mediterranean diet, finding that was kind of
we're kind of finding that like all of the good stuff in any form of alcohol is readily available in other things, and that at the end of the day, alcohol is just it's not good for you, and if you're going to consume it, do it in moderation as a treat.
But
it's
I was listening to someone talk about the Mediterranean diet. And I'm like, man, they're copying the No Duh diet.
There you go.
But, So that's kind of how like how living healthy can help improve your metabolic flexibility. Another thing I just want to throw out there, and this is kind of the last one before we start wrapping up, is fasting. Now, I can't think of a lot of times I would really encourage a high school athlete to fast. But for people that might be struggling with their metabolic flexibility, and might be over reliant on carbohydrates, like like myself, you know, is maybe occasionally have a period of time where you increase the duration that you're not eating or consuming carbs. So typically, like what I've been trying to do lately is just like after dinner, not eat until breakfast, you know, and it just gives us longer.
That's hard to do for me. That's my favorite time of day to eat.
I know. And that's like, I used to like, that's when I would have my toast and my cereal.
It's the best. It just hits so different when you've got like one light on in the kitchen at 11:30 and you're buttering that toast.
You know, like, cause I was wondering like, you know, is it better to eat like a little bit all day long or like spread it out more and have larger? And kind of the ideal thing is, you know, during the time of day when you're eating, you know, kind of do it in smaller increments throughout the day, but then have a large period of time at the end of the day where you're not consuming carbohydrates. And that just kind of gives your body a chance to get a little bit low, to start utilizing a little bit more fat. And, you know, and like I said, I'm not really recommending this to youth athletes, but you know, if you're someone like me that maybe is a little over reliant on carbohydrates, it's kind of a good,
it's a nice way to put it.
Good tactic.
See that guy over there, the one who's he's a little over reliant on carbohydrates. Over in the big and tall section. I'm gonna start a store instead of like, what's it, big and tall? It's over reliant, a little over reliant on carbohydrates.
Okay, so let's yeah. So those are just some things you can do to just maintain metabolic flexibility. I don't think any of them are too crazy. And things that like if you do them right, I don't see how it's going to negatively affect your performance. In fact, I think doing it right will ultimately improve your performance. Remember we talked about HIIT training this winter?
Is this a test?
Yeah. Do you remember what HIIT training is?
I'm sure I was here for the episode about it. I'm having a really mentally stimulating time of my life right now. And
healthy is fast.
Healthy is fast. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, just to kind of wrap it up, like you really don't have to be on one extreme or the other. There's a sensible place for you that might be on one side or the other in the middle somewhere, but you know, figure out what works best for you, what's healthiest for you, what's going to keep you healthy in the long run. You know,
like,
what you can sustain,
if you what do makes it for you three happy, weeks, it doesn't matter. So
what you can do every single day.
As you climb off the ladder here, I do want to throw one more thing in, because I did actually see something really good. I should say there are good content creators on TikTok. And one of my favorites said, if the diet or exercise regimen you are attempting takes a lot of effort, it's not going to work. And as weird as it sounds, you kind of have to find the laziest ways to check these boxes to make it sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Make it lazy and cheap, even if that means starting really small, because then it's actually going to work over time.
Yeah. We do tend to take the path of least resistance.
Yeah. Don't put a huge burst of effort into trying anything at the beginning and then falling off 9 days later. Like, find a lazy way to make this work, because then it'll actually work in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. Just remember, I was thinking too, you know, like, when it comes to cramming ridiculous amounts of carbohydrates down your throat on a recovery ride or a keto diet or whatever extreme, if it sounds stupid, it probably is.
And if it's being monetized, it for sure is. Like, I dare you to monetize anything we've told you other than canned fish. I'm in the pocket of big canned fish.
All right. Should that be our word?
I'm big canned fish. Big canned fish. What was the word that you like? It was something where you said that like the pa sound like three times accidentally, and I was going to name the episode after it.
I forgot. No, I like canned fish better.
Canned, big, in the pocket of big canned fish.
Just canned fish.
Canned fish. All right. Canned fish. As always, if you are riding right now, be safe. Be safe on Zwift. No Zwift crashes. Make good choices. Finish up final strong. Coming into winter break, we'll have some Maybird events we'll throw out, hopefully, here and there. I'll be off school. Maybe I'll throw in some weekday hikes even if you guys are bored.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be awesome if you could.
I'll try to throw that in. I've got an excited brother-in-law I need to entertain who hasn't been or somewhere where he can hike for a minute, so I'm going to be doing a lot of hiking with him. Be safe. Send us your questions. Eat some big canned fish.